Okay. All right. Well, for let me see. For right now, I'm going to spotlight myself just for a minute for the announcements, and then I'm going to go back to you. All right. We'll both spotlight. How about that? All right. Welcome, everyone. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, or whatever time it is where you are, and welcome. I'm Patricia Y. I'm a gratefully recovering adult child. A few housekeeping announcements before we begin. It is exactly 6:20 right now. Everyone is muted. You will be unmuted by our co-host Stephen. Would you raise your hand, Stephen, so that you'll show up there? I mean, your electronic hand. Can you do that? Because then you move right to the top. And if Bob calls, there he is. If Bob calls on you for a question or a comment, Stephen will be the guy who asks you to unmute, and then all you have to do at that point is click unmute over your little microphone. I don't know that anybody is on a non-smartphone, or as we like to lovingly call them, a dumb phone. You can use the star six to unmute and mute yourself if you're called on. And if you want to raise your hand from a non-smartphone, you can dial star nine to toggle your hand up and down. For the question and answer portions, we will be using the raise hand feature, which should be at the bottom of your screen as a separate icon. If it's not a separate icon on there, it will be under more. So hopefully you'll be able to find that easily for the raised hand. And if you have any security concerns or see anything inappropriate, you can chat to me, Patricia Y, or Alex. I'm going to ask Alex to rename. Alex, can you rename yourself as co-host before your name so that you'll show up closer to the top?
Yeah, one moment.
Thank you. And if anyone would like to rename yourself, you can certainly do that. Just click the right-hand upper corner of your own picture and click that and rename, choose rename, and you can put your first name, last initial, and your location in the world. And if you're having trouble or technical issues, you can chat to also to me or to Alex. Hopefully no one's having any trouble tonight. All right, we're ready for our speaker. Bob M is a fellow traveler from Boston, Massachusetts. His recovery has been greatly enriched by doing service for the groups he's been part of and for the Massachusetts Intergroup, as well as one-on-one with his fellow travelers. I have not met Bob before this year's annual World Convention this spring, and I was curious about his talk because how does reparenting fit in with service was kind of a something I hadn't considered, and I went to his presentation. I did not expect to have my a talk about service to knock my socks off, but Bob actually did that. And I especially liked his very gentle approach to getting people started in service and his suggestions for building up to more complex roles. And then we had to ask him if he would do it again for us at our intergroup, and he said yes. So here he is, our speaker for the day. Please welcome Bob M from Boston.
Thank you, Patricia. Thank you, Atlantic Southeast Intergroup. Really glad to be here. Apologize for not having a Boston accent. I actually grew up in New Jersey, but sometimes I can put it on just for fun. But welcome. Before we get too far, why don't we do a quick ACA Serenity Prayer to get going? If you'd like to unmute and join in, please do. God, grant me the serenity and
Grant
to
me the
accept the
serenity
people
the people
I
to accept
cannot
the people
change,
I cannot change,
the courage
the courage to change,
change the one I can,
the
and the wisdom to know
wisdom to know
that
that
one is
one
me.
is me.
Amen. All right. Thank you. Okay. So one of the things, so during the workshop today, we are going to have time to write. So if you'd like to grab a pen and paper, we're going to reference the Loving Parent Guidebook, but you don't need to necessarily have that. But if you want to have it, you can grab that too. And like in any kind of meeting, writing and sharing are both optional. Certainly welcome to come and listen, and no compulsion to write or to share. And glad everybody's here. Okay, so we'll do a little bit. The first part is going to be thoughts on service. These are my thoughts, they're certainly not official, but this is the things that I've come to know and understand and appreciate about service and how it can help with reparenting. And then we are going to do some writing. So there's going to be writing prompt number one with some time shares, writing prompt number two with some time shares, and then any announcements or next steps, and then we'll close it out. And there is going to be a Q&A session too as well. So I think we a lot of maybe 20 minutes of Q&A. So if you have questions, certainly would love to hear those and share my thoughts on those later. Okay, so thoughts on service. I usually like to anchor any kind of presentation with the official literature. So if you want to find out more about ACA service, in the Big Red Book, Chapter 10, pages 353 to 363 is all about service. You can look there and you can see more about service in ACA and how it can help. And then what I call the blue website. So the blue website is different than adultchildren.org. And the blue website is acawso.org. So acawso.org, and I have it up. Take a peek. I call it the blue website because it's in blue. And if you take a look on there, there's different things to find out more about service. So it's got an events calendar, which can be handy. There's a volunteer sign up if you'd like to volunteer at the intergroup, at the WSO level, and just lots of other good information. But ACA WSO, in some ways, is sort of an internal website for people that are in ACA and are interested in service and things like that, where adultchildren.org, what I call the red website, is sort of the public facing one for people that are coming to find out more about ACA. So that's the distinction there. And both are that and the Big Red Book, Chapter 10, are both great places to get more info on service. Okay. So one of the things is very early in a lot of the different meeting formats is this idea that we identify with the problem and learn to live in the solution. And I think that's helpful in a couple of ways. One is we want to identify with the problem and then learn to live in the solution. We don't want to identify the problem and then live in the problem, right? We want to identify with the problem, then we want to move beyond that to live in the solution. Service, how can service help with that? And there's a saying that a lot of people are tuned into WIFM, which is the station, what's in it for me? So doing service is great, helping other people, but what's in it for me as the individual fellow traveler doing the service? And that's really what service and reparenting and what this presentation is all about. So again, we come in, we identify with the problem. And if we consider, our time in ACA as a journey, right, we want to ascend, we want to climb, starting with the problem, but then moving up into the promises. But we want to have the promises come true in our life. And how do we get from here to there, right? How do we make that climb? And I think there's actually two things, and it's almost like, I like to think of it as sort of like two blades on a pair of scissors, that we really need both, right? If we're gonna make progress, right? We need the two different blades. And what are those blades? I think it's a combination of reparenting and service, that the two actually really can work very well hand in hand. And I think that reparenting without service and service without reparenting, if we're doing that, then we're missing half of the benefit and half of the program of ACA. And we'll be talking about that. So what is reparenting? So one of the ways I like to sort of frame it up, it's almost like an analogy. So reparenting, on the one hand, it's personal recovery, right? It's us using the Big Red Book, doing the steps, using the Loving Parent Guidebook. But those can be things that we sort of do alone, right? That's like the exercise routine we have where we know what exercises we're going to do, but we're doing it by ourselves potentially. And then service is the idea. It's almost like a gym where you're exercising, but other people are exercising around you as well, right? And one of the things I heard early on in recovery is that, getting into a relationship is like pouring Miracle-Gro on your problems, right? And getting into service can be a great way to bring a light and Miracle-Gro on your issues, because now you're dealing with other ACA people. They're in ACA because they're ACAs. We're in ACA because we're ACAs. And then we start to rub shoulders and try to serve together. It can really be a great way to get some exercise on our recovery. So personal recovery is what we do individually. And then service is the idea of working together, right? Because I'm fine as long as there's nobody else around. But when I start to serve with other people, that's when these things can come to light. But I think one of the things that happens is, and happens for me, is when I start to think about service, one of the things that will often happen is I'll start to have fear, right? Fears will come up. Prior to ACA, I was largely, driven by fear. And when I start to think about service and sort of stepping out of my own world and stepping into serving with other people, a lot of times fears will come up. And dealing with fears is one of the things that ACA has really helped me to do. So what are some of those fears? Well, I've got a list of them. So I think one of the fears is the fear that I'll do it wrong, right? I'm afraid that if I serve, I'm going to do it wrong. And if I do it wrong, there's going to be big trouble, right? Because when I was younger, right, growing up, if I did something wrong, then there was going to be a cost to that. And I think the fear of doing it wrong can be seen in two different ways. One is a sense that I won't do it perfectly, right? I'm afraid I won't do it perfectly. There's apparently some certain way that, you know, service is supposed to be done. And if I don't do it perfectly, then I'm doing it wrong. And if I'm doing it wrong, then I'm going to be to blame, and it's going to cause problems. But I think another way that I can consider being afraid of doing it wrong is I might not do it as well as person A. Oh, well, this person is so good at being the secretary, I'm not going to be able to do it as well as them. Therefore, if I don't do it as well as them, then I'm also doing it wrong, right? They may not be perfect, but if I'm not doing as well as them, then again, I'm going to look bad, right? I'm afraid that I'm going to look wrong. And both of those, you know, I can say from personal experience, have been very paralyzing in my life, you know, inside of ACA and outside of ACA, right? Whether it's at work or just in relationship with people or other community service that I've done, you know, the fear that I'll do it wrong can be one of the things that can really stop me from the willingness to serve. The next fear is the fear that I'll do it right. Because if I do it right, they'll never let me stop. Oh, he is, man, I don't know for you, but up in Massachusetts, the treasurer is one of those things. Oh, so-and-so is such a good treasurer. They know the bank. They've got the bank account. And the treasurer, poor person, ends up serving, you know, term after term after. They never get out. Usually they'll say something like, well, if anybody wants to be treasurer, no one does. Okay, well, I'll keep doing it, right? But the idea that if I do it right, they're going to never let me out. And that's another fear, right? It seems like it's the opposite, but the fear is, you know what? I see what happened to so-and-so as the treasurer. I'm not going to get into that situation because if I start, they're not going to let me out either. So there's a real danger in, you know, people that serve too long, right? And the fear that I'll do it right, again, is something that can really paralyze people from not wanting to get in, because if I get in, you know, it's like the Godfather, right? You know, they're never going to let me out. I thought I was going to get out and they sucked me back in again. So those are two fears, right? So one of the other fears is the fear that I'll be criticized, right? They're not going to fire me, but they just might criticize the way I'm doing it, right? And growing up as adult children, you know, speaking for myself, I know that a lot of times the criticism was one of the things that really was devastating, right? And one of the things is the idea that, you know, we viewed all criticism as a threat, that it can seem so threatening to my identity if I get criticized. And here I am in ACA. I want to do some service. I'm trying to turn my life around. I start to do service and I get criticized. And then, oh my gosh, it's the same thing all over again. And now the fear that my, you know, recovery family, my fellow, you know, trusted servants are going to criticize me just like it was at home, you know, thanks, but no thanks. And that fear of criticism can also be something that'll stop a person in their tracks from wanting to serve. And then again, the polar opposite, I'm afraid I'll be praised, right? Because if I get praised, uh-oh, my ego's going to explode. I'm going to start to think too much of myself, and now I'm going to have an inflated sense of self, and I'm not going to know when I'm doing things wrong. I better not serve because I might get praised. And then I'm going to start to want to take over. I'm going to want to rule the place and, you know, not be a servant. I'm going to want to be the leader, be the authority figure, you know, sort of the other laundry list, right? So those are four fears that I think can really, you know, hinder a person from serving. And one of the things I think that it's good to do, like with a lot of things, I think it's good to just sort of name them, right? To sort of put it out there. And a person can now say, you know, after this presentation, oh, you know what? I'm afraid I'm going to be criticized, or I'm afraid I'll do it right. I'm afraid I'll do it wrong, because there's a lot of power in breaking the don't talk rule. You know, even if we're talking about fears, right? Even if we're talking about service, like, can I be honest? Can I trust the people around me to talk to them about the fears I have about service? And one of those things that, you know, don't talk, don't feel, and don't trust, these are different things that can come out in service. Because if I talk about my fears and I'm willing to feel those fears and then trust other people enough to let them know, it can also be like a great way to recover, right? And this is one of the ways that service can really be helpful in reparenting, I think. Okay. So again, this isn't hard and fast rule, not necessarily, right? But the fears could be indications that your critical parent is active, right? I mean, are they good and grounded fears? Are they wisely, you know, considered fears? Is there recovery in those spheres? Or is it my critical parent is active? And this to me was one of the real eye openers, right? Because this idea that, oh, I'm not going to serve because I'm afraid, it could be just an indication that my critical parent is active. And if my critical parent is active, it's an ideal opportunity, I think, to reparent myself, right? To deal with my critical parent, right? To have a conversation, to do all the recovery things in the Loving Parent Guidebook to help the critical parent to get right-sized. So how could this be? Well, one of the things that's been very helpful to me is the Loving Parent Guidebook. And this is a little snippet. This actually comes from page 53. So if you have your Loving Parent Guidebook or you want to look it up later, page 53 is where this little exercise is. And it's entitled Signs That the Critical Parent is Active. And one of the things in the Loving Parent Guidebook, which I really like, is before I even think about healing myself with my critical parent, or getting better, or having tools to silence my critical inner parent, or to deal with them constructively, is this idea of just the awareness and that I should give myself, and it's wise to give myself awareness, oh, my critical parent is active. And in the beginning, that's enough, just to see that my critical parent is active. Well, how would I know? Well, this list is, these are some signs that my critical parent is active, right? So again, page 53. So signs that the critical parent is active, right? Perfectionism. That was the fear, right? The fear that I won't do it perfectly. If I'm afraid that I'm going to do it perfectly, that perfectionism could be a sign that, oh, it's my critical parent that's reemerged, or that's speaking up. The fear of all or nothing thinking, right? Never, always, nothing or everything. That's the fear that I'm not going to do it right. I'm either going to do it perfectly or I'm not going to do it at all. And if I say no to service because I'm afraid I won't get it perfect, so I'm not going to do any service, again, that's an indication, potentially, right? Again, this is for each person to decide for themselves, right? But these are, you know, sort of general indicators, right? Being judgmental toward yourself or others. How does that look? Well, that could be I'm judging myself harshly for the way I do service. I might judge myself harshly for not doing enough service. Or I might judge the people who are doing service. Right? Because criticizing other people, if I'm criticizing the current people that are serving, that can be a sign that my critical parent is active. Right? Worrying, catastrophizing, projecting into the future. Oh, things are going to go terrible if I start to serve. It's going to be a catastrophe. I'm going to somehow ruin the inner group, or I'm going to ruin my group. Right? Now, another one on the flip side, the critical parent being active is can also sometimes assign can be if I'm avoiding a healthy risk. So a healthy risk might be to serve in a new way or to serve in a different way. If it's a healthy risk, but I'm avoiding it, why am I avoiding it? It may be that it's my critical parent that's causing me to not do that. Right? And again, once again, if that is the case, if it is my critical inner parent, what a wonderful opportunity to do some reparenting around that particular service opportunity. Right, or the reluctance to do service. Making predictions. Oh, if you do this and you mess up, then you know you're going to be shunned from the community. The group's not going to like me anymore, right? Because of the way I served, right? I'm not serving as good. If I did some service in the past, or I did something that didn't work out 100%, ruminating on what went wrong. That could be my critical inner parent ruminating, causing me to ruminate on that thing. Oh, I didn't send the agenda out on time. Oh, I didn't, you know. Oh, there was a typo in the flyer that I made. And again, the idea we mentioned before about comparing, right? If I'm comparing my service to the service of another person or comparing my recovery to another person, that comparing, again, could be an indication that it's my critical inner parent. So one of the ways to sort of bring this whole list up is to start to do service or maybe to do a new or different kind of service. Because if these things come up, it's a wonderful opportunity because the critical parent gets active. Now I can deal with him. It's him in my case, right? Or being able to deal with the critical inner parent. But it's a great way to have these things surface. Right. Also rehearsing an upcoming event or conversation. If I'm fearful of something, rehearsing and rehearsing and rehearsing before I actually have the conversation or before I do the service, that can also be an indicator. So because of this, I think that service and reparenting really do go hand in hand, potentially, as a wonderful way for me to get everything I can out of ACA and also to start to really experience the promises. Okay. Yes, but. Famous lines, right? Yes, but. So all those are fears, so I should serve, right? Well, not necessarily, right? Yes, but I don't want to get overwhelmed. I agree service is a good thing, Bob. I agree that service is necessary, needed, right? It's a service organization, but I don't want to get overwhelmed. Or I don't want to get overcommitted. Maybe I've got a lot of other commitments in my life, right? I don't want to get overwhelmed and I don't want to get overcommitted. And historically, volunteering too much and or too soon is something that I'm here to recover from. That's my problem, is I take on too much responsibility for groups that I join or people in my life, right? Maybe I, you know, consider myself codependent because I do too much service. And that's the other side too. And I think being aware of that, you know, not only the avoidance of service, but the tendency to maybe rush headlong into it or to rush into it too soon can also be another issue. But if those are the cases that I'm dealing with or that are individuals dealing with, then again, reparenting around those things can actually be very helpful. But even considering, oh, serving at the intergroup level, or oh, serving in the group in a certain way, right? I don't want to get overwhelmed. I don't want to be overcommitted, right? I'm here to heal from this. But considering it and then saying no is one of the ways to heal from it, right? Because it's also a way to break the don't talk rule, right? If internally I'm saying no, but I find myself saying yes, well, getting that internal integrity where I say no when I mean no, right? And I say yes when I mean yes, then that's great recovery too. Okay. So this, to me, this is, again, this is from the Loving Parent Guidebook, and this is on page 4. And to me, the image says a lot. I like the fact that it's a cartoon, right? Because cartoons make it easier for me to accept and identify with it. So this poor fellow traveler, there are three circles, right? So the place he is now, he's in his comfort zone, right? And he's daring to step out, and it looks like there's a challenge zone and then an overwhelm zone. Right. And those are described in the text above. So the comfort zone is not trying new behaviors. In this case, you know, for tonight, we're talking about service, but maybe not trying new service, and not questioning limiting beliefs. So if I'm not trying new things and I'm not questioning my limiting beliefs, it could be part of the reason why I'm in my comfort zone. Right. And if I'm in my comfort zone, I mean, certainly being comfortable is a part of recovery as well, right? So it's not we always have to be on the edge and, you know, running ourselves ragged. But being overly in the comfort zone or being sort of stuck in the comfort zone only can be part of the problem, right? And then if we go all the way out to overwhelm, overwhelm is feeling overwhelmed, right? Or a sense of being lost physically or emotionally. And I know that can happen to me sometimes. If I'm overdoing it with service or overdoing it in any sort of life situation, it can really feel like I'm being tumbled in the waves, right? I sort of lose my bearings. It's hard for me to, you know, figure out which way is up. And I'm just overwhelmed. I don't have the downtime that I need to rest, maybe to recover, right? To take care of my inner family, to take care of other things that I need to do. I can overdo it on service to the extent that I'm not taking care of my other responsibilities. So comfort on the one hand and then overwhelm on the other. And I think one of the eye-opening things for me is this idea that it's not two states, though. There are actually three. It's not comfort or overwhelm. And I think for me, one of the things that's happened as a result of doing service is I started to realize, oh, there can be a challenge zone for me. It can be more than being in my comfort zone and not being overwhelmed. But that there is this middle ground that's possible, which is called the challenge zone. And how's it described? Well, in the text there, it says feeling some discomfort. Not 100%, but feeling some. And if we go back to the exercise analogy, if I go to the gym and I don't overdo it, I'm typically going to feel a little discomfort or soreness if I've exercised more than I'm used to, right? If I've come out of my physical comfort zone, but I'm not in the place where I'm paralyzed or I've overdone it, where I'm feeling, you know, where I can't move the next day, right? And what does it include? It includes attending to our needs. No, there's the big need word, right? Is sort of acknowledging and recognizing that there are needs that I have, right? I need rest, right? I need to be stretched. I need to create. I need community, right? I need love. I need encouragement. I need reassurance, right? And I love it in Appendix D of the Loving Parent Guidebook. It talks about these are universal human needs, right? And having needs makes me human. It doesn't make me needy. right? I have needs, but it doesn't make me needy in sort of a pejorative sense, right? That it's okay to have needs. Hey, I need a rest. I need a break, right? I need to not come this next meeting because I've got something else I need to take care of, right? So attending to our needs is part of the challenge zone. It also includes taking breaks. So serving, but taking a break and not serving for a term or not serving for a time is part of the challenge zone experience. It's acknowledging, hey, I need to take a break. I need to not do what I committed to do, right? And maybe, hey, I can't do it this month. Can you cover for me? And again, building that sort of relationship, but I need a break, right? And then the other part of the challenge zone is just taking program actions. So it might be taking program actions like, you know, doing some step work, right? Doing some loving parent reparenting check-ins, right? Doing some reading, right? Having a conversation with a fellow traveler, meeting somebody for coffee, right? Doing things that are fun, right? All those sort of promise type things, right? Learning to play and have fun in our lives, right? And if I'm able to do that hand in hand while having service responsibilities, I'm starting to learn to live in the challenge zone. So for me, one of the things that happened was, again, switching from two circles to three circles, right? Realize that there can be a challenge zone, right? It doesn't have to be all or nothing. But then the other thing, by doing service, again, back to the analogy of the gym, I've strengthened and I've expanded my challenge zone. I now have a bigger challenge zone that I can be in, right? My comfort zone is still my comfort zone, but I don't go into overwhelm right away, right? Because I've developed my recovery to the point where my challenge zone is now bigger. Right. And what used to be maybe terrifying or overwhelming has now moved into the challenge zone because I've done it and I've got some experience with it. Right. Also, as I get better at talking to other people in recovery that have done service or might be doing service at the same time and talking to them, that makes my challenge zone bigger and more robust because I'm not doing things alone like I used to. Right. And having others that are there in the challenge zone with me, or maybe that are modeling challenge zone behavior, is helpful to me, right? And as I model challenge zone behavior to others, it can give them a sense or a vision that, oh, it's possible to do this. It doesn't have to be overwhelming. It doesn't have to be comfort zone. It could be a challenge zone experience. And again, this is a part of, I think, how service and reparenting can go hand in hand, right? Because it's going to be very hard. I remember one time I had a service position. It was an in-person meeting, and I was the one holding the key to get us into the building. And I said, my time is ended. It ends this month. Here's the key. I'm putting it in the center of the room. I'm not holding on to it anymore. If somebody picks it up, great, but I'm not walking out of here with the key because I had done my service and it finished, right? And having a back door or an end point to the service is one thing I needed to do for myself to stand up for myself. Because if I don't specifically end my service, it's very likely and historically for me that I would just sort of continue doing it. Oh, well, gee, nobody else took the key. I guess I need to hold on to it. I guess I have to hold on to it. Actually, no, I don't, right? I can put it down in the middle of the room and let somebody else pick it up or not, right? And again, that was challenging. That was certainly a strength, personality and recovery strengthening thing for me. To say something like that, because again, I was saying it out loud. I was telling the truth. My time is over. I committed to 3 months. 3 months is now over. Right. Okay. Okay. So again, we're not alone, right? So also things that our groups can do to help safeguard the servants, right? Because we're all fellow travelers, right? That's how we got here, right? We recognize that we're adult children. Right? We behave, we respond to certain adult situations like children. And knowing that about each other, there are things that we can do to help each other, right? To be on the lookout, to guard each other, sort of like guardrails, right? So one of the things for me is if I'm put on the spot, I tend to say yes or tend to give in because I want to, you know, be a people pleaser. I want to do what they expect of me. I want to be liked, et cetera. So one of the things that a group can do is a group can ask days or weeks before the election, tell people, hey, we need people, you know, elections are coming up. They're going to come up next week or in a couple of weeks or, you know, several days from now in an email, right? To give people time that they can consider it before they're actually on the spot or before they're, you know, in the election. And a lot of times when that doesn't happen, people sort of put on the spot, well, I guess so. And they might say yes to something that they really, for their recovery, maybe be better off saying no to. The other thing, the second bullet, is having written position descriptions. So somebody, oh, who wants to be secretary? Oh, I'll do it. But they don't really know what the secretary position contains, right? And also importantly, what it doesn't contain, right? Because sometimes people do more than their responsibility and people think, oh, the secretary's going to have to do all of that, right? So having written position descriptions, so when people say, hey, the elections are coming up, you know, the secretary is going to rotate, this is the written description of what the secretary does. You know, please consider it. If you have any questions, please ask about them so that when they're doing it, they know that, hey, this is what it requires. If it's got four things that they're, you know, responsible for, four responsibilities and not six or eight. Because the other thing that can happen is there can be, you know, what we used to call in consulting scope creep. Like it just sort of continues to grow. Well, I'm going to do the email. Oh, now I'm doing the website also. Oh, wait, now I'm also, you know, paying the rent. I'm setting up the room beforehand. So knowing what's included can also be very helpful. And it's something that a group can do, I think, to help the other servants to consider service, you know, and not be afraid of getting in over their head. And it's also, for me, it's been very helpful to, if I don't know what the position involves, to ask, well, what does it include? That it's okay to know in advance. I don't have to find out on the job or after I've said yes to something. I can actually find out in advance and take good care of myself and my inner family by knowing what's required before I say yes. There was one situation and the person said, yes, there would be the group secretary. Great, we've got a new secretary. And then the person said that they didn't know how to use Gmail. Well, one of the big responsibilities was to send out the weekly emails to the group. So not knowing what their responsibility was, the person said yes to something and got elected to something that turns out they weren't qualified for. So by having a written position description and knowing in advance, it would have helped that person to make a better decision. So, well, gee, I'm not really good with Gmail. I'm going to say, no, I'm not willing to serve. Okay. So in addition to the description about what's included, the third bullet is about term duration and number of terms. And this is something that we did in Massachusetts for the intergroup, is we said there were certain positions, I think it was like 6 months, and a person could serve two times in a row, but they couldn't serve a third consecutive term, that they would have to stop and they could come back again later, but we limited the number of consecutive terms. And again, that's got a couple reasons. One is it protects the person going in that they're not going to serve, you know, indefinitely. But the other thing is it also enforces and builds in, which I think is a healthy recovery, service recovery thing, is the idea of rotation, right? That if the person can't serve again, then by default, somebody else is going to need to step in, and then the group gets the benefit of having a new person serve in that position. So the group benefits and also the individual benefits. And again, it puts sort of a backdoor and an end limit on that for the person. Now, sometimes it takes a little while to get used to a position too. So having, you know, two terms being okay, sometimes that's a good idea. Yeah, the person, they're going to sort of get used to it, and then they're going to really, you know, be in the zone for the second term, but limiting how many terms. And again, this isn't written anywhere in stone. And one of the great things is that any individual group or an intergroup can decide for themselves, hey, this is how we want to do service. So one of the things we did in Massachusetts, we developed, you know, a policies and procedures document that laid all of these things out. And then everybody knew. Now, the last one is something called service sponsors. So just like a person could be a step sponsor to help a person with steps, having a service sponsor can also be useful as well. It gives the person who's the fellow traveler a chance to talk to somebody who maybe has more experience with service, somebody they can sort of discuss things with if issues come up. And it's a way to, you know, break out of isolation. And the person can also be on the lookout if it looks like the person has overdone it or maybe overcommitted themselves. Having somebody who's not a part of the election process or part of the group, somebody they can talk to can actually be very helpful as well. And being able to verbalize those things, oh, I'm really having an issue with, you know, this person is giving me such a hard time, right? They're criticizing me and I'm not sure how to handle it, right? And being able to talk it over with a service sponsor, hey, these are some things that you might want to consider. This is how I've handled it in the past when somebody criticized me. Okay. Again, those are things that the group can do for the servant, and the person doesn't have to feel like they're getting into it alone. Okay, so what is service? So service, you know, according to the literature, is action coming from love. So action coming from love is different. It's not coming from guilt, right? It's not, it's also an action coming from a compulsion. So one of the things is this idea is love. So I think love, you know, multidimensional, right? So part of it, it's coming from self-love, right? And actually our first writing is going to be about what do we love about AC and what do we love about what AC has done for us? Because we feel that love for what AC has done for us, then wanting to serve and to sort of give back, you know, in part from what we've received, giving from the overflow, right? That service is going to have a different character than if I'm giving from guilt. I'm serving because nobody else is doing it. I'm serving, well, gee, you know what? I haven't done it yet. And everybody's sort of looking at me. I think they're expecting me to do it. I better do it. It's like my turn, right? Or like we said earlier, the compulsion. Like I need to serve because if I serve, then they will like me. And if I don't serve, they won't like me. So as sort of a means to be a people pleaser, right? And then the other thing is this idea of progressive responsibility. And that's something that Pat had mentioned in the opening and in the intro that we're going to talk about in some detail, right? So if service isn't all or nothing, what is this idea about progressive responsibility? Okay, and just a couple notes that you are certainly free to do service your unique way. There's not only one way to do it. If you have a certain way you want to do it, you can add your flair to how you serve. There may be certain things you like. I know for one group I was in, we had a secretary who loved, you know, formatting the emails and making them beautiful. And that was something that they brought to the position, and they added their flair that way. It doesn't have to be just bare bones, right? And also using a person's unique talents. That's another way to make service more enjoyable, I think. Okay. All right. So what might progressive responsibility look like? And again, this isn't definitive. This is just some things of what it might look like. So one of the ways that I think about it in a couple of different ways. I call it the service ladder for group service, right? That it's a ladder, that it's not an all or nothing. It's not a leap. Like I said, one view, right? This is just my view. Okay. So these are all service that are in yellow. See, it says done at the meeting. So this is service in my group. It's done at the meeting. And one of the reasons I think this is the first level is because if it's a meeting that I go to on a regular basis, I know and I'm familiar with some of the other people that are there, right? I have some sort of familiarity with their recovery.